Whoa, hang on a sec, Cassidy said to Layla or Lena or Lainey. Are you seriously texting someone right now? The girl's bright yellow blouse was wide open, exposing a skimpy bra the color of ripe watermelon. I'm so sorry. Cassidy zipped up her pants and rebuckled her belt. I have to make a quick call. Cassidy bumbled out of the bathroom with her phone to her ear as it dialed Katie's number. It was already ringing by the time she made it outside to the sidewalk. Hello? Katie? Cassidy yelled into her phone, covering her free ear with the palm of her hand, but she still couldn't hear over the street traffic. Are you crying? Katie was somewhere in Chelsea. That much she understood. You're right near my apartment, Cassidy shouted. She held out her arm to hail a cab, or rather her arm flew into the air all on its own, frantic and determined. Desperate, really. The cab pulled up just as whatever her name was bursting through Metropolis's door. You're leaving? Her yellow blouse was neatly rebuttoned, but the rest of her was chaotic. You are just going to leave me like that? Cassidy hurried into the cab and slammed the door shut. Emergency! She yelled through the open window. I'm having an emergency! Cassidy did her best to sober up on the 12-minute cab ride home by taking deep breaths and chewing on breath mints. She wasn't sure what she was walking into. Some tragedy had occurred, but whatever it was, Katie had thought to call her, and that had to mean something. When Katie had ignored her text, a siren had gone off in Cassidy's ears, a terrorizing sound of alarm that would not stop. It went quiet at the sight of Katie seated on her living room sofa. Katie was slouched over with her deep blue dress hanging half off her shoulder. Her eye makeup was smudged and her hair was tied up in a messy ponytail. What's going on? Cassidy crossed the room with apprehension. Are you okay? Katie looked at the floor, so Cassidy brought her voice down to a gentle tone, the kind you might use with a child you're trying not to frighten. Did something happen?
Not like you're thinking, Katie said. I'm just having a hard time.
Oh, good. I mean, that's understandable that you're having a hard time. Cassidy stumbled over her relief that Katie wasn't in real crisis, uncertain now of how to proceed. Can I fix you a drink? I've got a bottle of Evan Williams.
You do not, Katie said. Did you know they make that right near where I grew up?
Of course Cassidy did. She'd special ordered the bottle and had it overnighted. Not because she imagined Katie would ever be present to share it, but because she'd had an unrelenting craving for Kentucky bourbon since they first met. Cassidy half-filled two rocks glasses, then sat at a safe distance from Katie in her leather lounge chair. She would not allow herself to drink another sip of alcohol, but she had to fix herself a glass for appearance's sake. Katie sipped her bourbon, cupping the glass as if it held warm tea.
This is delicious.
Good, Cassidy said. Tears started running down Katie's face again. Maybe from the simple kindness Cassidy was offering. Maybe from the taste of home.
I'm sorry, she said. I don't even know what's happening to me. My emotions are all over the place.
It's okay. Cassidy leaned forward on her chair. You don't have to apologize.
I don't even know why I called you.
That's okay, too. Tears continued, and Cassidy could see that Katie was desperate for something. Comfort? Human contact? Anything to feel better. Cassidy watched her cry for longer than she could bear, before setting her bourbon on the table, rising from her chair and joining Katie on the couch. Katie inched closer to her the moment she sat down.
What were you doing when I called you?
She asked. Nothing much.
I hope I didn't ruin your night.
You didn't. Katie rested her head on Cassidy's shoulder.
Are you sure?
Cassidy heard herself exhale, like a release valve had been pulled. Positive. She placed her hand on Katie's back. It was a consolation touch, no different from any friend comforting another in an hour of need. I'm glad you're here. Katie lifted her head from Cassidy's shoulder, looked her right in the eyes.
I am too.
Cassidy didn't entirely trust herself to not pull Katie in closer. She'd ingested far too much alcohol to judge for certain what was happening in this moment, if the spark she felt between them was real or not.
I think you should stay here tonight, Cassidy said, before Katie could say anything else. In my guest room. You can hang out, do your thing, but I'm going to go to bed now, okay?
Katie's expression changed in a way that Cassidy couldn't read. For a second, she thought Katie might start crying again, or lean in to kiss her, or both.
I don't,
Katie said, and then stopped.
Okay.
Great.
Cassidy launched off the couch in the direction of the guest room, which no one but Gina had ever slept in. Girls who spent the night usually did so in Cassidy's bed. She detoured into the bathroom, flipped on the light, and waited for Katie to catch up to her.
There are towels there if you want to take a shower. New toothbrushes here.
She opened a drawer below the sink. Katie peered into the drawer.
Why do you have so many?
Cassidy searched her hazy brain for a second.
I like to replace them fairly often, she said. Easiest to buy in bulk.
A lie. They were one-night stand toothbrushes, of course. Cassidy continued on into the guest room. The cleaning service just came yesterday, so the sheets on the bed are fresh. She untucked the bedspread to reveal the freshly laundered sheets. Katie grazed her hand across the surface.
Soft.
They're Italian, Cassidy said. 1,020 thread count.
Who knows their sheets' thread count? Katie said. I guess you're as into textiles as you are toothbrushes.
Pajamas. Cassidy snapped her fingers. You'll need pajamas. Be right back.
She jogged into her bedroom, realizing that she was sweating gin. She could smell it on herself as she dug through her dresser drawers. She returned to the guest room with her only pair of sweatpants, neatly folded on top of a white t-shirt. Katie was sitting on the edge of the bed.
Those look normal enough, she said.
Cassidy handed her the clothes.
What were you expecting?
I don't know, some silk get-up Hugh Hefner might wear.
Good night, Katie.
Hold on.
Katie held up the sweatpants.
Are these cashmere?
Cassidy nodded.
Who buys cashmere sweatpants?
Good night, Katie,
Cassidy said again, this time making her escape and closing the door behind her. Cassidy couldn't sleep, not with Katie in the next room just a few feet away, so she did what she always did when she needed to burn off some energy in the middle of the night. Crunches, followed by push-ups, followed by crunches, followed by push-ups, until there was nothing left in the tank. The repetition soothed her, and the pain would eventually be strong enough to force out every last thought, like whether Katie was awake, if she was twisting and turning, wondering what would have happened if Cassidy hadn't retreated. 21, 22, 23. Would anything have happened? 24, 25, 26. It couldn't all be in Cassidy's head that they had a connection, but she'd done the right thing putting a stop to it. The wrong thing would have been to take advantage of Katie. To be led by her own desire when she knew the girl was a mess and in a total tailspin. The best Cassidy could do was duck out of the way. 30. Cassidy sprang up with one knee and planted her hands firmly on the floor beneath her shoulders.
She lowered her body down, careful to keep her back flat. One, two, three. Then again, wasn't Cassidy also being taken advantage of? It was Katie who probably wanted to use her as an experiment, as a distraction, as a painkiller. Since when did Cassidy not want to be used? She lived for the agony of doomed erotic collision, for self-sabotage. For, I know this is going to hurt, but I'm going to do it anyway. In fact, that's why I'm going to do it. Cassidy's phone dinged with a text, and she jumped to standing. What if it was Katie from the next room, asking for company, asking for more? She tugged the hem of her boxer briefs down from where they'd ridden up on her thighs, then reached for the phone. It was a text from Gina.
Heard you booked it out of the Met like a maniac. WTF.
Christ, WTF was right. Another text.
Who was the girl?
Cassidy sat on the edge of her bed and wrote back, which girl?
You're sleeping with her. I know you are.
Who?
You know who.
I wish, Cassidy wrote, and then deleted it. I'm not, Cassidy wrote instead, but she's sleeping in my guest room. Gina wrote,
she's staying over and you're not gonna sleep with her? This is worse than I thought.
Cassidy chucked her phone aside. This was worse than she'd thought, too, which is why she had to keep her guard up. She had to protect herself. She needed to stay the hell away from Katie. Do the opposite of what her impulses told her to do. She dropped back down into a plank. Not only for Katie's good, but for her own. One, two, three. For once, she would do the right thing. Chapter 9. Katie woke up and yawned her way into Cassidy's kitchen, following the scent of fresh coffee. There, she found Cassidy wide awake in jogging shorts and a sweat-wicking tank top. Katie was startled by the sight of so much bare skin, Cassidy's calves, thighs, and shoulders.
Wow, Katie said. You are really fit.
You're up early. Cassidy appeared surprised to see her, like she'd either forgotten Katie had spent the night or was trying to sneak out unnoticed.
I was about to go for a run, she said. There's coffee for you.
Katie poured herself a cup. Something about the way Cassidy was looking at her, or refusing to look at her, brought a knot to her stomach. There had been a moment of weirdness last night. Katie hadn't been sure of it at first, but Cassidy's avoidance of her now confirmed it. Though it was possible Cassidy was just too embarrassed for Katie to look at her. If she were Cassidy, she might have a hard time looking at her, too. What had she been thinking, calling this almost stranger in tears, and then spending the night in her spare room in her pajamas?
Hang out as long as you like, Cassidy said, while stretching her quads. She may as well have put up a wall between them.
Can I come with you? Katie asked.
She'd surprised herself by asking. A final apology and walking her embarrassment home would have been much more appropriate. But the idea of dashing through sunlight and fresh air, not alone with her sadness, but with a friend, was too enticing to pass up. Its appeal trumped Katie's shame. Cassidy clasped an exercise watch to her wrist.
Do you run?
Yeah, I run, Katie said.
Cassidy appeared dubious.
I usually do 7 miles on the weekends.
Katie chugged some coffee, then set down the mug.
Let's make it 8.
I'm not one to decline a challenge, Cassidy said, but you don't have any sneakers. And no offense, but I've seen you try to run in high heels before.
I'm a size 10, Katie said. Do you have a pair I can borrow?
Cassidy closed one eye, no less dubious.
I wear a 10.
That makes sense.
Katie gestured toward Cassidy's body. We're kind of the same size. You're just...
Careful, Cassidy said.
What? I was going to say you're more muscular. And I have more...
Katie drifted off, understanding now about being careful.
I'm going to need a sports bra. Can I wear one of yours?
Right. Okay.
Cassidy averted her eyes and moved toward her bedroom.
It'll probably be too small.
Katie almost followed Cassidy into the bedroom, but she stayed put, sensing she was not welcome there. That's okay, she said, trying to sound nonchalant. I like to keep them nice and cozy when I run. Cassidy was silent. All Katie could hear was the opening and closing of drawers. She was tempted to ask if it would be weird for Cassidy to have Katie wearing her bra, or if it was weird for Cassidy to wear a bra at all. It was kind of weird for Katie to imagine Cassidy wearing a bra, or anything so female beneath her clothes. Did she keep her bras in the same drawer with her men's underwear? Cassidy returned from the bedroom with a pair of sneakers, shorts, socks, and a t-shirt. The sports bra was hidden somewhere in the middle of the pile. Katie went to the guest room to change, noticing this black pair of shorts and charcoal shirt were definitely not from the Nike women's department, where almost every article was splashed with hot pink or baby blue, and the shorts lacked this underlayer that she assumed was for genitalia holding. But the clothes fit Katie fine. They were just a little less form-fitting than she was accustomed to. She returned to the living room, dressed and ready to go.
Looking good, Cassidy said.
Katie smiled. I feel like I look like you.
Not quite.
Outside, the morning was crisp and bright. They jogged west to Chelsea Piers, then south along the Hudson, all the way to Battery Park, talking about waterfront real estate and climate change and the preposterousness of waterfront real estate prices in spite of rising sea levels. On their way north again, they addressed the faults of the federal government's legislative branch. Katie also learned that Cassidy had an aversion to raw carrots and anything lavender-scented. And Katie shared with Cassidy how she despised goat cheese and loved pickles. And sometimes she went to the dog park, even though she didn't own a dog. There was a strange comfort that came from talking while not facing each other. Katie could look out over the water at the Statue of Liberty, or focus on not colliding with other runners or getting run over by a tourist on a city bike, while telling stories about herself she might not have told otherwise. What they didn't talk about was the moment of weirdness, and the more Katie thought about it, the more she wanted to talk about it, the more she wished Cassidy would be willing to talk about it. But each time Katie made a feeble attempt to bring it up, Cassidy redirected their conversation. When Katie said, I know I seemed totally out of it last night, but just so you know, I wasn't drunk or anything. Cassidy said,
It would have been okay if you were. How'd you like the Evan Williams? Good as back home?
When Katie said, I called you last night in such a state because I tried to go on a date with a guy I met online. Cassidy said,
Good for you for getting yourself back out there. Which dating sites do you use?
Maybe it was better this way, just letting it go, chalking it up to confusion. Cassidy was doing her a favor by refusing to let her overthink it. Katie scanned the horizon, straightening her neck and back. Her shoulders, she noticed, were creeping up on her ears, and she was clenching her fists, so she dropped her arms to her sides and shook them out to release the tension.
We're coming up on 8 miles.
Cassidy showed Katie her watch.
Already?
Katie said. I feel like I could keep going. Cassidy seemed equally unwilling to rest, so they kept running, pushing themselves, delighting in the exertion. Eventually they stopped talking, but their legs continued in sync, paced to one another. With the sun on her face, endorphins coursing through her brain, Katie was reminded of the thrills she felt on her walk home from dinner with Cassidy, of the carelessness Cassidy embodied, the buzz of selfish freedom.
They finally stopped to walk after 10 miles, when they found themselves back at Chelsea Piers. Spent and breathing hard, they bought some water from a pushcart, chugged it, and then threw themselves onto the grass, blissfully exhausted. The grass was cool and prickly on the backs of Katie's arms and legs. She could smell the rich dirt beneath it.
"I can't remember the last time I lay on the ground like this," she said, "without a sheet or blanket or anything."
Cassidy's eyes were closed, but Katie could see her chest rising and falling with her breath.
"Me neither."
"Why is that?" Katie said. "It's wonderful."
Cassidy smiled, still with her eyes closed.
"I don't know."
There was no good reason for Katie to remain at Cassidy's once her purse and keys and last night's dress were in hand. But when Cassidy asked her to stay for lunch, she agreed before she could think of a reason not to. Katie was the first to shower. In Cassidy's spectacular bathroom, she turned on the showerhead and closed her eyes as a steamy waterfall rained over her shaky muscles. On a narrow shelf at eye level was a black razor that sat on a silver shaving stand. Alongside it was a small jar labeled Crema Rasée. Katie left the razor set up alone, but she lathered each aching limb with Cassidy's luxuriant anise-scented soap and cleansed the sweat from her hair with Cassidy's European shampoo, newly sentient of her living, breathing, thriving body. There was that heat again, that throbbing that would not quit. What would she do, she wondered, if Cassidy opened the bathroom door right then and slipped into the shower with her? How would her body react? But what kind of thought was that to have? Katie seemed to be all out of whack. She was reminded of the way some of the horses in the stables back home would act up at the change of season. Late fall would approach, and a usually calm and steady mare would start behaving like she'd been possessed, walking with a heightened awareness, over-alert to every sight, sound, and smell. This was how Katie felt here in Cassidy's shower, wholly in the power of her bodily urges, spooked by an almost imperceptible change in the air. Katie revved the faucet hard and to the right for a surge of icy cold, and then stepped out of the shower onto the slate tile floor, 1 foot at a time. She wrapped herself in Cassidy's soft terry cloth robe. On her way to the living room, her dripping wet hair left a trail of droplets behind her. Cassidy was seated on the couch, bent over her laptop, still in her exercise clothes. She looked up at Katie, then immediately back down. Katie watched her and tried to name exactly what it was that she felt toward Cassidy in that moment. Affinity? Attraction? She was objectively attractive, gender aside, striking even, and a charmer when she cared to be. If Cassidy were a man, Katie might have crawled onto the couch, let her robe fall open, and seen what happened. But she wasn't a man. "I'm ordering us some lunch." Cassidy turned her laptop around and shot up to standing. "Just pick out whatever you want and then hit send. I'm going to hop in the shower."
"Are you sure I'm not overstaying my welcome?" Katie asked, while blocking Cassidy's route to the bathroom.
Cassidy smiled at Katie's refusal to let her by.
"I'm not even going to dignify that question with a response."
"I'll head home after lunch," Katie said.
"You don't have to."
Cassidy remained still, no longer making any effort to pass.
"I like having you here."
"Do you have big plans tonight?"
Cassidy took a half step backward.
"I wouldn't call them big. There's a barbecue at Metropolis every Sunday. Tonight's the last one of the season."
"Is it fun?"
"Why do you ask?"
"I don't know," Katie said. "Maybe I'll come by."
Cassidy seemed to consider this.
You keep showing up at Metropolis and people might get the wrong idea.
In spite of herself, Katie felt a thrill shoot up her spine. She shrugged her shoulders and stepped aside then, allowing Cassidy to make her way to the shower. Katie stood in front of her closet, wearing nothing but her black lace bra and underwear, trying not to think too much about where she was headed and why. She wanted to go to the bar, so she was going to go to the bar. It was as simple as that. She preferred to focus on her outfit. A barbecue called for casual, but she didn't want to go so casual that her lace undergarments felt bullied or out of place. Of course, this was the moment her mother chose to call her. She swore the woman had a sixth sense for whenever Katie was doing something she wouldn't approve of. "Hey, Mama," Katie answered, in a tone of voice that she hoped in no way revealed that she was standing in her underwear, preparing to go to a barbecue that would blow her mother's head right from her body.
"I told you I want you checking in more often now that you're living alone again," her mother said, not bothering with a hello.
"Sorry, I've just been busy."
"Busy doing what is what I want to know."
It was a mixed blessing that her mother knew nothing of FaceTime or Skype. On one hand, it allowed Katie to continue getting dressed during her mother's inquisition, but on the other, it might have helped with her mother's relentless inability to visualize Katie's New York life. If she could actually have seen that Katie was okay, she might have worried less. Katie could see almost exactly what her mother was doing in that moment, even without the help of an app. She would be talking to Katie from the kitchen, the phone crooked between her ear and her shoulder, while she went about preparing Sunday dinner. Chuck roast with potatoes and carrots, or roast pork with applesauce, or maybe chicken and cornbread. There'd be a skillet sizzling with buttered green beans or buttermilk-dipped okra. Her mother would be wearing a brightly colored cotton top, turquoise or magenta, or a flower pattern, and comfortable pants, but also a full face of makeup, with her highlighted hair blown to perfection.
"Have you heard anything from the professor?" she asked.
By the professor, her mother meant Paul Michael, who she understood worked in the arts, but long ago she decided that, in her words,
"he didn't just talk, he professed things. Plus, he looked like a college professor with those thick eyeglasses of his."
"No," Katie said. "I haven't heard anything from him, and I don't expect to."
"You just need to find somebody better," her mother said. "Somebody more like us to get you halfway straight."
Dear Lord, if her mother only knew where Katie was headed after she hung up this phone.
"Are you in for the night?" her mother asked.
There was that sixth sense again. Katie hated to lie. Her mother had always been difficult, but she'd also been Katie's main confidant all her life. Katie had
ripped my guts out,
again her mother's words, by moving to New York, and then made a bad situation worse by bringing home an airy-fairy boy like Paul Michael, and still her mother had not given up on her. But telling her mother the truth this time, that she was off to a gay barbecue to meet up with her new gay best friend, was more than Minnie Daniels could reasonably bear. It would raise too many questions in her hidebound, alarmist mind.
"What could you possibly have in common? Is she fixing to get you to hate men? How do you expect to meet a good man if that's where you're whittling away your time?"
Katie considered it an act of love to reply, "Yeah, I'm in for the night."
"Are you eating?"
"I will have dinner."
Katie filed through her closet hangers.
"Yes."
"I wish you'd come home."
"I know, Mama, but I've got to go to work tomorrow."
Katie picked out possible skirt contenders while her mother persisted.
"I haven't gotten a letter from you in ages."
"I'll write you one, I promise, but you have to let me off the phone first."
"My green beans are starting to burn up anyway."
"Okay, then," Katie said.
gladly accepting her mother's passive aggression with a goodbye and an I love you before ending the call. Back to focusing on her outfit. Katie settled on a printed skirt and black moto jacket, then dug through her jewelry box, certain she had some accessory that could be read as Metropolis appropriate. Aha! The fishhook clasp leather wrap bracelet that she'd bought a year ago, but never wore because Paul Michaels said it looked sadomasochistic in a Mapplethorpian kind of way. Perfect. When Katie arrived at the Met, Gina was leaning against the building, smoking a cigarette. She exhaled a gray cloud and whistled, which Katie interpreted as validation of her ensemble. Then Gina asked, "What in hell are you doing here?" Inside, the bar was astonishingly uncrowded, and somehow this was worse than when it was full. Seeing Metropolis empty in the daylight was like looking at Darth Vader with his mask off, stripped of its prowess and capacity to intimidate, and all around forlorn. But there was a raw vulnerability to it, too, that Katie found endearing. This larger-than-life space was, in fact, just a room like any other. It struck Katie, then, how much it was about the people who filled the space with drama and personality, with love and grudges and outsized emotion that made a place what it was.
"Keep going," Gina followed behind Katie. "Everyone's in the back garden."
Katie continued on to the back garden, which was actually just a concrete patio, surrounded by a high wooden fence. A latticed veranda paradise this was not. And yet, the moment Katie stepped foot on that cracked concrete, she felt at home among the checkered tablecloths, the red and blue plastic cups, and the smell of singed meat.
"This way."
Gina escorted Katie past two women in skinny white tank tops manning the grill, their nipples visible through the thin cotton. Dahlia, the bartender, was pouring a pitcher of beer, wearing pigtails and a hot pink bikini.
"How'd you get back in here?" she called out to Katie. "Didn't I put you on the banned for life list?"
Katie halted, and Dahlia's face broke into a warm smile.
"I'm just playing with you, wild turkey. Welcome back. Make yourself at home."
Katie returned Dahlia's smile, and relaxed just enough then to fully absorb the backyard family barbecue vibe of her surroundings. It occurred to her how long it had been since she'd gotten to kick back and enjoy a shitty hot dog and some cheap beer surrounded by friends. She suddenly wanted to pull her American flag bikini top out of retirement, the one Paul Michael forbade her from wearing in public, throw on some shorty short Daisy Dukes and get loud. Maybe try to talk everyone into a touch football game. She and Gina reached a long rectangular table in the back that was already littered with potato salad-splattered paper plates and half-eaten tofu pups. Seated at the table were Chef Becky and a few people Katie had been introduced to her last time at the Met. And there was Cassidy, next to a girl Katie didn't recognize.
"Look who I found," Gina announced to the group.
Cassidy turned around, shocked to see Katie standing there, and not in a good way. She was a deer in headlights. No, she was a deer just downed by a Remington 308. Hadn't Katie hinted hard enough that she might show up? Did Cassidy think she was bluffing? Chef Becky leapt from her seat.
"You came back to us! Come, come, sit down! I just got a fresh pitcher."
Katie approached Cassidy and stood oddly at the table's edge over the stranger who was seated between them.
"I didn't think you'd show," Cassidy said.
"Surprise,"
Katie said. Everyone shifted one space over to make room for Katie at the table, so instead of getting to sit next to Cassidy, she was stuck beside this stranger.
"This is Anika," Cassidy said.
"Nice to meet you."
Anika put out her hand. Katie sized her up. She had long red hair, green eyes, and a scratchy voice like a sexy movie villain. She was pretty and stylish and capable of properly applying lipstick, which Katie was quickly beginning to realize was Cassidy's type.
Anika's visiting from L.A., Cassidy said. She's working on a cooking show with Becky.
More lesbians in the food industry. Hey, Anika said. Did you hear me?
I'm sorry, Katie said. What?
Your bracelet.
Anika touched the soft black leather encasing Katie's wrist.
I love it. I mean, it's basically a cock ring, but you wear it well.
Then Anika let out this bah-ha-ha laugh that was unbelievably loud. Cassidy laughed with her, and Katie noticed how Cassidy was hovering all close to Anika, and she was smiling wider than she normally did.
So you're a food stylist?
Cassidy reclaimed Anika's attention and direct eye contact.
Forgive my naivete, but what does that mean exactly?
I dress up food, Anika said, for photos and TV. You know, the perfect cherry pies and turkey skin you see in magazines? That's all me. You'd be amazed by what I can do with a blowtorch and some PVA glue.
I'm already amazed, Cassidy said.
Anika reached into her empty rocks glass, picked out an ice cube, and slipped it into her mouth. She asked Cassidy,
What do you do?
I'm a lawyer.
Oh, that's...
Anika crunched hard on her ice.
It's all right, Cassidy said. You don't have to pretend it's cool.
Okay, good, Anika said, a smidgen too loud. I won't. Ha ha ha!
Katie claimed a plastic cup from the stack at the end of the table and poured herself some beer while Cassidy listened to Anika go on about L.A.
It's so annoying how, like, no one talks about weed like it's a drug. They talk about it like it's a vegetable.
The beer was warm, but Katie drank it anyway.
And you first met Becky on the set of Knife Fight? Cassidy asked.
Ugh, yes. She tried to hit on me while cranking pork butts through a manual meat grinder. I was like, gross.
Katie poked at someone's abandoned paper plate with a plastic knife. She made a little hollow in a mound of potato salad and filled it with baked beans. Anika was now going on about how to manipulate pancakes so the syrup glided perfectly over the edge.
First, you stick cardboard between the layers. Then you spray them with water-repellent Scotch Guard. Then you feed them to your worst enemy.
Over the course of the next hour, Anika's laugh got rowdier, her humor brassier, her voice sultrier. Cassidy turned up her charm about as subtly as a dog coming in the heat. Katie couldn't decide which of them she wanted to smack across the face more. Cassidy, probably. Who was Anika to her? Nobody. While Cassidy was, well, whatever she was, not a very nice friend at the moment, or very considerate. Out of nowhere, a girl wearing overalls with only undergarments underneath came over to hit on Katie. She stood over her, leaning against the edge of the table, suggestively sucking on a lollipop.
"Is this your first time here?" she asked between licks.
Katie watched Anika's hand travel to Cassidy's knee. Then she watched Anika lean in toward Cassidy's ear and whisper something. Katie couldn't make out exactly what, but she imagined it was something along the lines of, "You are so goddamn sexy." Cassidy glanced in Katie's direction for a split second before turning right back to answer Anika. "So are you," she most likely said.
"Should we get out of here?"
This part Anika announced loud enough for all to hear.
"I'm staying at Becky's. It's just around the corner."
She stood up before Cassidy could answer.
"I'll get her keys."
Cassidy stood up too as Anika headed over to Chef Becky. Katie reached for her purse. She wanted to do something to stop this. She couldn't let Cassidy go. Becky, Katie noticed, looked to Cassidy once Anika got hold of her keys. In fact, it seemed to Katie like everyone was looking at Cassidy right then, but Cassidy was looking at her.
"You're leaving?"
Katie asked, startled at finally having Cassidy's undivided attention.
"With her?"
Cassidy nodded.
Why? Katie said.
Cassidy stood still, dumbfounded.
I don't know.
Katie stepped toward her.
I don't want you to.
You don't?
Cassidy said.
Hey, asshole!
Nika called out from behind Cassidy with Becky's apartment keys in hand. Get out of the way! All drinking and laughter and chatter ceased. Katie waited. Time slowed down, but also somehow sped up. Katie's senses heightened, her heart rate jumped, and she became conscious of every surrounding detail, even as she fell into a hallucinatory, oblivious state that felt kaleidoscopically unreal. Cassidy's kiss was hesitant at first, provisional, but soon they fell into a rhythm.
What the fuck?
Anika's scratchy movie villain voice pierced Katie's ears. You New York bitches are all fucking crazy. Others were whooping and howling.
It's on! I called it! Everyone, pay up!
Cassidy was the first to pull away. Leave with me, she said.
Yes, Katie said. Okay.
Chapter 10. Cassidy rushed them out of the bar to the street. The moment they climbed into a taxi, she was ready to kiss Katie again, her mouth, her neck. All the questions disappeared. She could disregard holding back. Katie wanted this as much as she did, and this part Cassidy knew how to do.
West 18th and 10th, she said to the driver, and leaned across the seat.
Katie was looking out the window. Cassidy admired her face in silhouette against the city passing by. She had the urge to reach over and sketch its outline on the glass. By God, how she ached for this girl.
Why are you being so god-awful mean to me? Katie said.
And only then did Cassidy realize that Katie was leaning on the door of the far side of the cab like she was considering jumping out.
Wait, what? Cassidy said.
Why were you acting like that?
The hurt in Katie's voice was too familiar.
When I went there just to see you.
But we were just making out,
Cassidy wanted to say. Can we just get back to doing that?
Katie turned to look at her. Finally, waiting for an answer Cassidy didn't have.
Cassidy thought about bringing her mouth to Katie's again, to remind her that they'd already moved past this, that they were already moving forward. Cassidy should say she was sorry. Why couldn't she just say that she was sorry? Katie shook her head.
But watching you with that other girl, she said, I got jealous. What do you think that means?
Cassidy tried to maintain a neutral expression, to not startle Katie one way or the other.
I don't know.
If you don't know, Katie said, how am I supposed to know?
Katie turned back to the window, and Cassidy let her do her ruminating in silence. You got jealous because you like me, Cassidy thought, because you wanted me to take you home. Isn't that obvious? When the taxi pulled up to the front of Cassidy's building, she stepped out onto the curb and held the door open for Katie, but Katie remained seated.
I'm going to go home, Katie said.
Cassidy searched for the right words to put Katie at ease, to save the night, to convince her to come upstairs, but all she said was, okay. Cassidy entered her apartment, looked around, and rubbed the back of her neck like she had whiplash. What the hell was she supposed to do now, after being ditched like that? She considered turning around and going right back to the Met, but she didn't really feel like explaining how she ended up back there alone, especially to Anika. Or worse, Gina. Instead, she trudged into her kitchen, where she immediately noticed that Katie's coffee cup from that morning was still in the sink. She opened the fridge, stared into the light for a few seconds, and then closed it. She gazed into the fruit bowl on the counter, deliberating whether she felt like eating an apple, decided no, and then grabbed a lemon. She would fix herself a proper drink,
Manhattan with a shaved lemon peel for garnish and all, and then she would find someone to come to her.
Why were you being so god-awful mean to me?
She slammed a glass onto her bar, threw in a perfect square of ice.
Why were you acting like that?
Bourbon, vermouth, bitters, shake, pour. The lemon zest really did the trick. Pleased with herself, Cassidy carried the drink into the living room. She sat in her favorite Sonata lounge chair and scrolled her phone. Who was she in the mood for? She could have whomever she wanted. There were probably 20 girls in her phone whom she could text right now and have undressed within the hour. She specifically designed her life to function this way. She worked hard and played hard, and she didn't apologize. And anyway, she didn't tell Katie to show up at Metropolis. Katie did that all on her own. She had nothing to feel bad about. This was who she was. She had sex. It was basically her hobby. Why should she feel guilty about that all of a sudden? Since her first college girlfriend, this was how it had been. Cassidy had told Katie about Jen, but she'd failed to mention that what she and Jen did best was fuck. All the time. And that back then, Cassidy never imagined that she could be so carnal and uninhibited, or so fully satisfied by another person. So she surprised herself the first time she cheated on Jen with a girl from her political theory class. And the second time with a girl from the gym. And the third time with a girl who waited on her at Starbucks. But thinking of it now, Cassidy remembered how each indiscretion began as an innocent flirtation, a stroke of the ego that quickened over time until it progressed into something faded and unstoppable. Maybe Cassidy didn't need to tell Katie any of that because Katie already knew. She sensed it in Cassidy's inability to convince her otherwise, and that's what sent her home. It was simple, good intuition. The way Katie looked at her in the cab, it was the same look that Jen had given her after she found her out, when, on what would have been their 6-month anniversary, Jen confronted Cassidy on the steps outside her dorm and asked, "What the fuck is wrong with you?" What was wrong with her? A lot, most likely. Cassidy sipped her Manhattan with one hand while furiously scrolling through names with the other. She reached the K's, and her phone's roll settled onto Katie's name like a losing slot machine. The worst part was that she hadn't even gotten to sleep with Katie, and somehow she'd still managed to hurt her. Why were you being so god-awful mean to me? Why were you acting like that? Because she could. Because nothing got to her. Because this was what Cassidy did. She wrecked people.
Chapter 11. In her windowless office with glass walls, Katie tried to appear normal. Across the hall, she could see Marion, the perpetually bleary-eyed, prematurely graying senior associate, with whom she was working on a new deal, pecking away at her computer, while Katie pretended to be engaged with hers. Beneath Katie's computer monitor, just to the right of her keyboard, sat her cell phone. She'd strategically barricaded it between two stacks of file folders, where it was safe from Marion's line of vision, or anyone else's who stepped inside. The phone had not lit up all day, except for the numerous times Katie had nudged its button to make sure she hadn't missed a text or call. She couldn't really blame Cassidy for not checking in, but it would have been nice if she had. Yes, Katie had ruined last night by freaking out, by chickening out. She took full responsibility for that. But Cassidy could have been a bit more sensitive and understanding, couldn't she? Just then an email came in from Marion. Still waiting on those documents to come in for signatures. No problem, Katie emailed back. They made eye contact through their respective panes of glass. Marion quickly shot off another message. Your hair is really getting long. Is that on purpose? Direct comments on Katie's appearance were a Marion specialty that would have bothered Katie far less if they were better friends.
But in spite of Katie's early efforts to ply Marianne with offers of Starbucks and invitations to afternoon frozen yogurt, they weren't that close. After 2 years of working together, their conversations rarely went deeper than complaints about a broken scanner or low toner in the copy machine. And then out of nowhere, bam, Marianne would blindside Katie with some shameless cheap shot about her shoes or eyeshadow. In this case, though, Marianne's barb was justified. Just this morning, Katie had thought to herself that she was due for a hair appointment with Vivian. But she decided her split ends could go on a little longer, till she felt more ready to face Vivian with the news of her broken engagement, not to mention everything else that had happened since. "Not on purpose," Katie wrote back to Marianne, punctuated with a smiley face. Then she checked her cell phone. Still no word from Cassidy. Katie added a few more file folders to her phone's barricade and decided to surrender. She would be the one to break. She texted Cassidy, "Any chance you're around tonight? To talk?" Then she waited. Nothing. Great. This was like being 13 all over again, when everything was so new and inexplicable, and all of it felt like a secret. But it was way more enjoyable back then. Adults should not behave this way. Of course, by refusing to go up to Cassidy's apartment, Katie had only confirmed what Cassidy already probably thought of her, which was that she was clueless and confused. She was clueless and confused. Katie understood that just because you make out with a woman one time, it doesn't mean you're gay. But what if you find yourself angling to meet up with the object of your affection the very next night in hopes that you might have a few drinks and it'll happen again? She tapped at her phone to open Google. The cursor blinked anxiously in the search box. After a quick glance to make sure Marianne was contained behind her desk in her office across the hall, Katie typed the question into her phone, "What do lesbians do?" Before hitting the search button, she added, "To each other." Finger at the ready, poised to X out of whatever porno nightmare might pop up, Katie was relieved to be greeted with a barrage of lists and tips from what appeared to be semi-reputable sources. A few words jumped out at her as she scrolled. Oral. Penetrative. Anal. Anal? She thought. Really? She scrolled some more. G-spot. Fisting. Sex toys. Then her phone vibrated, and she nearly fell off her chair. It was a text back from Cassidy. "I'd really like that, but I'm going to be stuck here late tonight." Katie read the text 3 times over. Was it possible Cassidy was lying? That she was avoiding her? She tried to evaluate the composition of this text from Cassidy's position. Straight girl flirts with you, straight girl kisses you, straight girl freaks out and goes home, and then texts you even though you've made no effort to remedy the situation. Yeah, this was a blow-off text if she'd ever seen one, which was fine. It was probably for the best, in fact. Katie had tapped back to Google to exit the page and also clear the search from her history when she noticed a link for a store called Babeland. She clicked on it, and a banner appeared across the top of her screen that read, "Shop, Sex Info, Community, 30% off all vibrators." She must have passed by this place 1,000 times. There was a location just a few blocks from her apartment. Though it wasn't surprising that it had escaped her attention. Katie often caught herself walking around her neighborhood on autopilot, anesthetized to the city's glory in a way that would have scandalized her younger self. The homepage alone for this store terrified her, so Katie zeroed in on the info portion of the banner. More info would be good. She clicked around to learn more. How could more info not be good? The store didn't only sell toys, she noticed. It also sold books, and somehow an informational sex book seemed more wholesome and trustworthy than the dark and anonymous internet. If Katie was going to seek out lesbian sex facts, she might as well be sure they were of the factual variety. It didn't mean she had to go off and actually have lesbian sex. But she had kissed a girl, and she had liked it. And Katy Perry didn't have much more to say on the matter other than that one song, so perhaps a research trip to the sex shop was in order. "Knock, knock," Marion said as she swung open Katie's office door. "Documents are ready for signatures." Babeland was open till 10 p.m., so Katie figured, why not swing by? She was a grown woman fully capable of entering a sex store without the excuse of shopping for a bachelorette party gag gift. She stepped through the door like it was no big deal, like the first sight of the dildo table didn't make her want to cover her eyes. "Hi there." A salesperson who looked like an Alison Bechdel drawing, with spiky hair and glasses, approached from behind the register. "Can I help you with anything?"
"Just looking."
Katie sidled over to a non-threatening shelf of books. She reached for a pink and red tome with a cover that appeared to be a minimalist depiction of two breasts and a snatch, and paged through it. "Are you looking for anything in particular?" The salesperson had followed her to the shelf. According to her name tag, her name was Elizabeth, which struck Katie as an overtly feminine and queenly name for such a gender-neutral woman. Why not Liz or Lizzie? Maybe she had been tortured throughout middle school with taunts of Les or Lezzie. Katie held up the book.
"Is this for gay women?"
Elizabeth smiled in a friendly way, perhaps because she was a gay woman, or at least a very gay-looking woman.
"It's for anyone who wants to have better sex," she said.
Katie laughed much too loud. Christ, this place made her nervous.
"I would like that," she said.
"Do you have a partner?"
Elizabeth asked. Katie shook her head.
"I don't think so."
"Would you say you're looking to explore self-pleasure?"
Elizabeth gestured toward a table of vibrators. Katie hugged the sex book to her chest and nodded. She followed Elizabeth to the table, not wanting to get too close to the alien-looking contraptions before her. Some were bendy and rubber with bulbous heads. Others had animal ears or wires coming out of them. She couldn't imagine where in hell on a person's body they were supposed to be applied.
"Do you already have a vibrator at home?"
Elizabeth asked.
"No."
Katie looked to her left and then to her right, before reaching out to pick up the biggest and most embarrassing contraption of the bunch.
"This one looks like the hand blender I used to make smoothies."
"That's the magic wand," Elizabeth said. "It's a classic, but not for everyone, and definitely not a starter vibe."
She clicked it on, and its rumbly vibration made Katie jump.
"You can also add on an attachment."
Elizabeth led Katie to a center table that featured a spread of dildos standing at attention, like perverted wooden soldiers. Many had balls, which Katie found baffling. Elizabeth picked up a brightly colored silicone attachment that looked like a cross between Gonzo from the Muppets and a disabled elephant. She squeezed it over the head of the wand vibrator and explained how this was an accessory that transformed the wand from a solely external tool to both an external and an internal one. That was the exact word she used, accessory. Like this was a simple pair of earrings that you could choose to wear on the outside or inside of your ears.
"It's perfect for G-spot massage," she said.
"I squirted across the room once using that thing,"
a voice from somewhere said. Katie turned in the direction of the voice, to a woman wearing a black leather corset and holding a whip like the one Indiana Jones used.
"I highly recommend it," she said.
"Okay, thank you."
Katie handed the wand back to Elizabeth.
"This gives me a lot to think about."
Too much to think about. What had this woman squirted exactly?
Were there fluids that Katie didn't know about?
I can take it from here. You can go help that nice corseted woman over there.